This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Anything you want. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. If you appreciate what we do here on Free Talk Live, then we would appreciate it if you directly support the program by joining our AMPS program, as Dominic Bashford has done. He is a silver-level supporter of AMPS. AMPS stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. It's a way for you to get behind what we do here 7 nights a week on Free Talk Live, on broadcast radio, on podcast, live streaming, and satellite over Africa as well. So thank you to everybody who supports the show through the AMPS program at amps.freetalklive.com. That's where you can get signed up through our Patreon. If you don't like Patreon, we have an option for you. You can go to video.freetalklive.com to our Odyssey channel and click join at the top of the page there, and then you can sign up with your debit card or credit card that way as well. So you got more than one way to support the show directly. Once again, try amps.freetalklive.com or video.freetalklive.com. It's Ian and Chris here tonight. We've got Major Payne on the line talking about a disturbing number of Americans of a younger age, the younger set of Americans, those under the age of 30. It's about 3 out of 10, 29% of them that say that Americans should have government camera systems inside everyone's homes. And when you increase the age from...
Does that include the bedroom?
I don't know if they got that detailed with the questions, but since in-home's pretty bad, whether it's in your bedroom or your bathroom or your kitchen, it's still pretty disturbing.
Wow.
And then it's 20% of those 30 to 44-year-olds, so millennials, 20% of them, 1 out of 5, say, yeah, bring the government cameras in, my house, your house, everyone's house. Major Payne, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sure they even equipped the tidy bowl man with his own little boat camera. It's in your toilet now.
I don't even like having cameras on the outside of my house, let alone inside, right? Like.
So anyway, you think back about this. You're talking about people 30 and under, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
It was about 20 years ago that the inner tube took deep root on society.
Yeah.
And what I'm bringing up is the stress of the mother during the pregnancy, speaking of which, here goes the cops flying by my frickin' house.
Yep.
Can you hear him?
I heard him. Yeah, I hear him.
They're there.
All right, what else?
There they are.
Just try to ignore them. Go ahead.
Oh, hell, they're going deep after somebody. They're riding 3-4 deep. I ain't even got the window open, but I can tell by the noise.
As long as they're not rolling up in your front yard, we'll just keep the call going, all right?
They've done that before, but they don't do with that with lights blaring. They want to catch you with your underwear on.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so
anyway,
what else, man?
So when the mother is in a stressful situation during pregnancy, she is much more likely to throw a hyperactive or even, ADHD, they used to call it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And you just think about the deer and the domestic stock of the world. When you're born in the wild and there's always something trying to eat you, you got to learn to be hypervigilant or you ain't going to survive.
Okay. I mean, I could see that. I could see that as a creature who could be exterminated by, a lion or a tiger around every corner. That could cause a little bit of anxiety. I could understand that. But in today's society, you don't face those kind of dangers, the biggest danger young people are going to face is they're looking at their phones, they're walking around, they might smack themselves into a telephone pole or something like that.
And that is the danger, is the eternal stress on the young teenager trying to be accepted on this internet society where everybody just goes,
you know, the crazy thing I find about that is it's so much easier, I think, online than it is in the real world. Like, there's different communities that you can participate in, right? Like, you're not forced to participate on just Facebook with, like, your other peers in your local, you know, area.
That's
like,
true. Yeah, you can select your community.
It's so wide and so broad. If you have a topic, you know, something of interest, right? Like, for example, you know, I'm into technology, so I would go onto technology forums, right? Like, you don't have to go on Facebook. You can find something you're interested in.
Right. That's a great point.
Find friends and make friends.
Well, the thing is these kids, they want to be accepted, you know? So the little fishes, they swim with the school. And kids are cruel. Hell, they was cruel when I was in school. And now you got them just talking with their thumbs, where you can't even stick your tongue out at them or tell them you're full of beans or, you know. Here's my opinion and that's that.
Yeah, if you're not on the phone, you don't exist to young people.
And you know what else? You can, like, the crazy thing is, like, you know, teenagers back in my day, you couldn't just block somebody. Now you can hit the block button, right? Like, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I really don't either. But if you're out there and you want to weigh in, feel free. What else, Major?
First time I had a little teenage girl, maybe 15 years ago, put her hand up in my face and say, talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I about wanted to slap that child. It's like, what? Get back in your sandbox, you stupid infant.
Major, thanks for the call tonight. I appreciate it. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Maybe you are out there using this technology and you have some kind of explanation. Is it the technology that is causing the anxiety? Because I'm on the internet all the time. You're on the internet all the time, Chris. Now, to be fair, you aren't on any major social media sites. But I'm on Twitter.
Yeah, but you know what? I am on platforms that other people in my community are on, in the same sense that if somebody was on Facebook, they're probably interacting with people. I'm assuming, maybe I'm wrong here because I don't use Facebook, but they're interacting with other people, like, maybe at their school or at their job or something, right?
Presumably.
Yeah, oh, that's right. You don't use Facebook either.
But my point is that, like, well, I have used Facebook. It's been 5 years, but I did use it at one time for most of a decade, I think, of my life. And I wouldn't say it caused me anxiety at any point. It caused me some annoyance.
Yeah, because, annoyance is probably a better word for it.
But anxiety, no. But maybe, again, I'm in my 40s, right? So I didn't have the same experience growing up as the younger set. And I'm like you on this one, Chris. It's hard for me to relate to why these people are so anxious. And further, why they would support government monitoring of their homes. Let's continue with the story here from Reason.com, looking at a study by the Cato Institute, which they link to here, and I've actually pulled that up. It's pretty interesting. It's about CBDCs, the central bank digital currencies. We can talk about that in a moment. But they interviewed this psychologist, Clay Routledge, who is the vice president of research and director of the Human Flourishing Lab, the Archbridge Institute. He was the one who was making this theory that he believes that it's younger generations are more anxious because of internet, basically. He has been following these developments for years. In 2017, while teaching at North Dakota State University, he wrote a piece for the New York Times examining survey results revealing declining support for free speech and democracy among younger adults. He worried that years of safety-obsessed parenting and schooling promoted a, quote, culture of victimhood that made children anxious and fearful. Those children then carried their concerns forward into adulthood. Now, that makes sense to me.
That makes a lot of sense to me too. I totally get it. It's interesting. I grew up, I think, in an era when I was younger that didn't have that safety, you know, thing. And then somehow in my teenage years, it kind of became big.
Right.
And it was like, like, okay, you're now concerned about, like, what movies I watch? Or, like, when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, nobody cared. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm a teenager, people care? Like,
did your parents fall into that trap?
It was just a general thing. Like, mm-hmm.
it was in society, but it didn't affect your family?
Yeah, like, I mean, I remember going to the movies and watching R-rated movies when I was younger. No problem, too. No parents. And then the first time I think I ever encountered, like, as an example, I went to a movie theater in Boston when I was, like, 13, mm-hmm. and I couldn't get into an R-rated movie. It was the first time I'd ever been carded to get into an R-rated movie. And I just was like, what is this? What are you talking about? You want to see my ID? Like, I just didn't understand that because I hadn't been babied to death, you know.
So you were able to get into R-rated movies before the age of 13 with no parental?
Yeah, there was a theater down the street, and uh-huh. I was like, it wasn't a big theater. It was like 7 or 8 screens. Yeah. And you go, no problem.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, but this was in the, you know, we're talking about the early 90s as opposed to the late 90s. And the late 90s is when it seemed to become more of a, you know, there was more babying going on, I feel like.
I think maybe it was just I didn't even consider trying it as a young person.
Well, I mean, were you like in a suburb? Did you have to drive to get to the theater? I mean, there may be some other factors here, right? Like, if you had to drive to get to a theater, you probably had to have some adult with you, so it wasn't an issue. But if you were able to get to the theater yourself on a bike or, you know, just walking there.
I think it probably had to do with whoever it was that ran that theater in your particular case, that they just didn't care.
But the same thing was true with, like, VHS and DVD rentals. Like, it wasn't mm-hmm. until a teenager that I ever had a problem renting. Like, R-rated movies.
That's interesting.
Like, same thing. And, mm-hmm. and the funny thing about that was they would sell me, like, Blockbuster would sell me an R-rated movie without ID, but they wouldn't rent me the movie.
It's ridiculous.
I was just like, really? Like, you will let me buy the movie for a few dollars more, but you won't rent the same movie to me. Well, I actually had that happen once at a Blockbuster.
Yeah, that's crazy. But the whole victim, or not victim, helicopter parenting, that's the thing. That came out when we were doing the show almost 20 years ago, this idea of the helicopter parent, the parent that was always hovering.
Yeah.
They're always there. Wherever their kids are, they're always paying attention.
You got to call the friend's parent before, you'll let your kid go play with that kid. It's like that's just crazy to me. Like, yeah. I understand that, like, you know, there are some bad parents out there or there's some bad kids, but, like, that you have to – I actually had a friend – well, I don't know if I call him a friend, but when I was younger, there was somebody I knew who actually had a parent – who would call and insist on meeting up with the other parents before they would allow their kid to play with, like, the friend or whatever. It was just, I just did not, I don't understand that level of, like, paranoia.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand the reasoning for that because, you know, if you are concerned with what your kid's going to run into, and some parents are more concerned about, like, you know, let's look at, like, a Christian parent, for instance. You know, they may not want their kids going over and watching movies that they would not normally want them to watch. I mean, these are a little more controlling types of parents.
Yeah, control freaks.
But I can understand why they would want to meet those parents. And you also wouldn't want your kid going into, like, you know, a dirty trailer or something like that. They're going to get some sort of infection or whatever from being there.
I could understand that. But you can react to that situation too, you know, once you've learned about it. You don't have to take the step of watching and, like, logging on a GPS device, like, but I mean, I don't know. Like, when I was little, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have these devices that would let parents, you know, watch every place. You know, if your kid didn't get home, you know, at 6 o'clock or whatever, you know, you'd be pulling out, like, trying to figure out where they were. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, it's not yet dark. You know, give it another couple of hours before you start freaking out.
Yeah, there's a really great website called Free Range Kids. I haven't been to it for some time, but the lady that created the site and the organization, Lenore Scanese, we've had her on the show before. She was the lady who made headlines probably more than a decade ago, maybe like 15 years ago. I don't know how long it's been, but sometime. She made headlines for being, quote-unquote, the world's worst mother because in New York City, she allowed her, I think then, 8 to 10-year-old son to take a bus home from school.
Oh, my God.
By himself.
Really?
Yeah. Like a big boy, right? Like, you know, you take the bus.
I mean, this is not...
Not the school bus.
Yeah, I get it.
City
I get
bus,
it.
Right?
This is not that abnormal. In many, in probably most of the world, this is normal.
Yes.
Or at least it was a decade ago.
Right, and that's the thing. Well, that's the thing. It's been probably at least 20 years that this whole safety society thing, or safetyism is a newer term that I've heard for it, has been pushed heavy.
I knew somebody who was a bit younger than me, probably like maybe 8 to 10 years younger than me, whose parent would not let them have friends because, like, they
any friends.
Any, they weren't allowed to leave the house because of this whole paranoia, the safety paranoia.
That's insane.
Yeah.
This was how long ago?
Like 7 to 10 years younger than me.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, just that's... So that, I think...
But this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, we're talking about the 90s, early 2000s. That's when this paranoia, I think, really started, to come into play. I mean, when I was younger, like, nobody wore around with, like, helmets and, you know, knee pads and all that stuff. I mean, kids, you know, they get scraped up, but for the most part, they'd be all right.
Yeah,
and,
for the most part.
Yeah, and then they started passing these
helmet laws,
seatbelt law, you know, all of these things where I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but I don't necessarily think you need a law. And you certainly, I think it's, you've just gone overboard when you're so paranoid.
Yeah, I think that this psychologist is correct on this one, that the constant nannying, the constant surveillance, the lack of freedoms, the restrictions, the rounding off of all the corners, mandating helmets, all this safetyism has absolutely had an effect on the younger generations. I think that's a good theory. It's something we've been talking about for years here on Free Talk Live. He says, in short, fear causes people to privilege psychological security over liberty. And, of course, what is it that the government does best? It gives you reasons to be afraid. The government wants you to be in a state of fear because then you will turn to them as the, you know, the solution to whatever the problem is, whether it's drug dealers from the 80s and the 90s, whether it's terrorists from, you know, 2001 through 2018 or whatever, and whether it's COVID from 2020 or domestic terror, quote unquote, which is the new thing now, and oh yeah, climate change, we got to be afraid of that. They've been pounding that in on the kids for the last 20 years as well.
It's even longer than that.
Yeah, but they didn't do it like pounding when I was growing up. Like, it was there, maybe,
yeah,
but
they
it was.
They did in New Jersey.
Did they?
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, I definitely know in elementary school the climate change thing was, you know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's worse now, but.
Oh, I bet you it is.
You know, it was definitely there.
Yeah, I think it's a lot worse now than it was for you then. Let's go to the phones here. We got Tim on the line in Florida. Tim, you're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Chris.
He said lose your assets.
Hmm?
He's talking about
lose your assets.
What about losing them, though? I'm sorry, what?
Oh, no, you just said lose your assets. It's like a Beavis and Butthead joke.
Sorry, I don't remember saying it, so I
don't
apologize.
Know the reference either.
Yeah.
No, it's all right. Actually, what I called about the conversation you're talking about.
Which one?
Well, the nanny state. I think the introduction of SSRIs had a lot to do with this, and like the overdiagnosing of mental disorders probably starting in about the late 90s. And yeah, it basically comes from the psychiatric industry where they basically just, you know, it will, once you start giving a kid medication for anxiety and, you know, he's going to the psychiatrist every, you know, once or twice a week, you know, and he's getting mollycoddled. Yeah, you know, he gets trained, you know, basically into this industry. You know, it becomes almost like a religion. If he accepts it, if he rejects it, he throws away his meds, and he just doesn't.
That's a good point. I mean, you know, what your parents say to you when you're growing up is what is the truth, right? And if you are growing up with these overprotective parents that are constantly telling you, you gotta look out. Oh my God! You might get kidnapped, or whatever it is that they would say to these
kids.
That's
such a rare thing.
Parents
are so freaked out by kidnapping, and
it never happens.
It never happens. The only kidnapping that really happens is when there's like a divorce situation and the other,
parent,
they call that kidnapping. Yeah, yeah. So that's why you have
you
like
factor
a
that out,
right?
You factor that out, and it's like down to zero, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, somebody was saying the other day about the Jay Noon and Shallon trial that we've been discussing on the air, where they were charged, or she was charged with, quote, child endangerment for leaving their 2-year-old in the car, air conditioning on, nice day outside, not hot or anything.
Low 70s, but I think we found out it was a high of 70.
68 or 70 or something.
Like, I'm surprised the air conditioning was even on.
But it was. And strapped into the car seat. And there's somebody online who was a supposed Bitcoin libertarian in New Hampshire was trying to, like, hold me to task on this, claiming that it was a danger to the child because it could get out of the car seat and, like, drive the car, or that it could, or somehow hurt itself.
Can't even, reach the pedals. How is he going to drive the car?
I don't think they said drive it, but, somehow hurt themselves in the car.
I'm sorry.
Or get kidnapped. I was like, this is New Hampshire we're talking about. Your kid's not going to get kidnapped out of a car. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
The car was locked. Second of all, you have a situation where that maybe could happen, but wouldn't it be the parent who knows whether or not their kid is capable of getting out of the car seat?
Yeah.
If they're not capable of getting out of the car seat because they're strapped in, it's not a danger. You're imagining dangers that don't exist, and then convicting based on that.
I'm
sorry, but the danger that does exist is the busybodies that end up calling the police.
Yes.
So if you know this, don't leave your kid in the car.
But maybe she thought she was in New Hampshire where people actually respected other people's freedoms. Unfortunately, it turned out this woman who called the cops works for the police. She works for the county attorney.
Yeah.
And so she's absolutely a total Karen.
Well, and the craziest thing about this is there is no law that says you can't leave your kid in the car for a few minutes.
That's true.
Right.
And she didn't leave the kid in the car for any length of time. The car
Less than an hour.
The car was still the car was still on. The air conditioning was still on, and her car apparently turns off after 15 minutes.
It was a remote start,
Yeah, and the
15 to 25.
If you listen to the witnesses during, and I was at this trial, if you listen to the witnesses, it was anywhere between 15 and 45 minutes. They had no idea how long that kid was in a car.
Nope. Tim, what else did you want to share tonight?
Yeah, well, that's why even with my dog. Now, if I go to a rest stop on a road trip, I'll just take her into the bathroom with me, or, I'll try to do a curbside, whatever they call it, curbside pickup, if I've got her with me in the car, because somebody's going to call, and then I'm going to lose my dog, and that's, the most important thing in my life. Only other thing I called about, really, was I was thinking about Poloniex. In the old days, you could register for a Poloniex account with a fake name. You could just upload your BTC.
Yep, this is a crypto exchange. Yep, crypto to crypto.
Yep, and they had margin trading accounts. You could not go negative on them, but you could lose everything, but you can margin trade, which was really exciting. You had a opportunity to make money there.
Did they get rid of that?
Yeah, they got rid of that, I think. And the other thing was you could lend to the margin traders, and that was virtually no risk.
Well, except for the risk that you put money on a crypto exchange. Hey, thanks for the call tonight, Tim. I appreciate it. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. By the way, people outside of the United States still have access to a lot of these features he's talking about, the margin trading or the staking services and all that stuff. It's just the people in the U.S. that are going to get screwed. More coming up.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
U.S. USA News Update. Special Counsel Jack Smith says his office will seek a speedy trial in the federal indictment against former President Trump. The indictment accuses Trump of lying and misleading federal investigators in order to hold on to classified materials. The DOJ says no one is above the law.
We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone. Nothing more, nothing less.
In a post on Truth Social, Trump referred to Smith as a deranged lunatic and psycho and questioned the prosecutor why isn't he going after President Biden for his handling of classified documents. The NBA Finals continue tonight in South Beach. The Heat will host the Denver Nuggets for Game 4 of the 2023 NBA Finals. The Nuggets enter a 2-1 series lead after a 109-94 victory in Game 3. Dave Collins, USA News.
Hey, y'all, Jeff Foxworthy here. Now, if you've ever found yourself repeating the same thing over and over for 75 years, you might be Smokey Bear.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
That's why I'm filling in for Smokey to switch things up, because there's a lot more to say. And I should know, because my grandfather was a firefighter. And one of the things he taught me is that the people that love the outdoors the most are often the ones accidentally starting wildfires, which means always BYOB. No, bring your own bucket to the campfire. And be extra careful with things like burning yard trimmings. Don't just walk away, or chances are you might be starting a wildfire. So for the love of the outdoors, go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. Phones are open. If you want to join the show, the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here in the studio tonight is Ian and Chris. And coming up later this year, our very own co-host Mark Edge is going to be traveling to Prague once again for the Liberty in Our Lifetime Conference. It is the best place to learn about the so-called Free Cities Projects, which purport to be self-governing territories that uphold individual rights and freedoms. Now, whether that's true or not still remains to be seen, because a lot of these free cities haven't gotten off the ground. But representatives from those projects will be present from the U.S., Honduras, Germany, and even Norway to share updates on their progress and explain why you should consider moving to or doing business in a free city. Mark spoke last year at the conference. He'll be speaking again this year. And if you want to attend, you can save 10% on your tickets by using code FTL. That's FTL like Free Talk Live. Just go to libertyinourlifetime.org. The event is October 14th and 15th in Prague. You can meet Mark and the rest of the Free Cities Project's people there. It should be an interesting event if that's something that you think would intrigue you. That's libertyinourlifetime.org, code FTL, saves you 10% for the event happening in Prague, October 14th and 15th. We are talking about a study done by Cato Institute looking at the CBDC, but it had an interesting question. I want to look at the larger study here in a few moments and see what Americans are saying about their interest in the CBDC, but apparently
Not quite one in three of younger Americans under the age of 30 support the idea of putting government monitoring devices, cameras specifically, into people's homes. Quote, the government installing surveillance cameras in every household in order to supposedly reduce domestic violence, abuse, and other illegal activity. 3 out of 10 people in the United States under the age of 30 support that. And so that's what sparked this larger conversation. Reason.com with an interesting piece here. Interviewing a psychologist, Clay Routledge, from the director, or he's the director of the Human Flourishing Lab at the Archbridge Institute, suspects that the safetyism that we hear about so often in the last couple of decades, maybe even the last few decades, has been what has driven younger people to this obsession with being safe all the time. And, of course, we saw it on wide display in the COVID situation that happened a few years ago, where everyone seemed to be obsessed with safety. It wasn't actually everyone, but it felt like it, especially in the bigger cities. And you've got, you know, parents, Gen X, and maybe even Boomer parents and Gen X parents who've been trying to protect their children from all kinds of experiences, negative experiences like scraping their knees when they're on their skateboard or bicycle or whatever. And just this constant overprotectionism is what he says may be, you know, leading people to demand more government in people's lives. And yep. I think he might be right.
And it's scary to think this, in that people learn by doing and making mistakes. To protect your child is to undermine effectively education, their learning.
Absolutely. Making mistakes is the only way that you can actually learn.
Yeah.
I mean, if mistakes happen to other people, maybe you can pick that up, but you really don't get it until it happens to you.
Yeah. I mean, basically what it comes down to is we like to think that we learn, you know, from other people, but most of the learning that we really do in life is from making our own mistakes.
Which is one of the reasons why it takes so long to bring people on board with understanding the ideas of liberty, because until the government has screwed you directly, it's just not the same. You just don't pay as much attention. So Routledge's concerns echo those of Greg Lukianoff, the president of the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, and social psychologist Jonathan Haidt in The Coddling of the American Mind, which is an article published by The Atlantic in 2015 and then later expanded into a book. They delved into the then relatively new phenomenon of intolerance on college campuses for the free exchange of ideas. The roots, as they suggested, lay in overprotective child rearing that encouraged anxiety and warped culture. Quote, stories of abducted children appeared more frequently on the news, and in 1984, images of them began showing up on milk cartons. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
In response, many parents pulled in the reins and worked harder to keep their children safe. The flight to safety also happened at school, they said. The result was a vindictive protectiveness that smothered dissent and prioritized safety over liberty. I mean, what's the old saying? I don't know if it was, I think it's attributed to Jefferson, but it was somebody else. I don't know if it was Ben Franklin, but those who desire safety over liberty will get neither,
yeah,
basically.
Something like that.
I'm sure I'm paraphrasing it somewhat.
It's pretty close, what you quoted.
Of course, they say at Reason, we can't be sure this is a growing preference rather than a blip. Oh, sorry, I missed the this. A 21-year-old college graduate at the time, in 2015, would be 29 now, which is the upper age of the cohort with the highest support for Orwellian surveillance. We may be seeing preferences for security over freedom carried forward into discussions about privacy and surveillance. Though we can't be sure it's a growing preference rather than a blip or something younger survey respondents will grow out of. Nobody seems to have thought in the past to ask Americans if they considered George Orwell's dystopian 1984 a viable blueprint for the future, so the question will have to be repeated, but the data gives us something to consider.
Yikes.
Quote, we don't know how much of this preference for security over privacy or freedom is something unique to this generation or simply the result of youth. However, there is reason to think that part of this is generational. Americans over the age of 45 have vastly different attitudes on in-home surveillance cameras than those who are younger.
So, I mean, they're installing, youth is, population in general as a whole seems to be installing these cameras themselves voluntarily.
What do you mean by that?
The Amazon, Ring, I think?
Oh, right.
I mean, this isn't even something that, like, the government is mandating and people are doing.
Just happening on its own.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there may be something to the idea, though, that it's a younger person's problem and people may grow out of it, hopefully. That they're going to grow out of it. I mean, the old saying about younger people is they tend to be socialists, but then when they actually have life happen to them, they change their views. So maybe they're just too young to realize how evil the government is, and maybe they'll figure it out as time goes on. So that's the optimistic view of this. At least one expert studying the issue agrees the surveillance survey results reveal something real and unsettling. Routledge said, I do think this new finding from Cato is just one indicator of a very real trend of Americans, and especially younger generations of Americans, prioritizing security over freedom. And I think it's a bigger issue than many realize. And the reason why it's a big issue is because the government doesn't actually make you safe, okay? They actually put you in danger, because if all of a sudden you've got a government security camera in your home watching everything you do in your living room or in other rooms, they may see you doing something that you didn't think was illegal, but it turns out it is illegal, and then they send in the goon squad to come kidnap you over it. Or maybe you are doing something that you did know is illegal. You're smoking marijuana in some of the states where that's not allowed. Federally, it's not allowed at this point. And so now you got federal FBI agents knocking at your door, right? So, like, just because you don't think you have something to hide doesn't mean that you don't actually have something to hide from these people.
And if you look at the statistics, the number of, like, no-knock raids, for example, has been going up and up and up.
Sure it has.
And even though they've, like, I think they've in theory, put some restrictions in theory, like the courts have put some restrictions on these no-knock warrants, or the number of them being issued or something to that effect, they're still doing the no-knock warrants, and then they're just, you know, lying about it or, you know, not or, or admitting that they didn't knock, but nothing happens as a consequence, so they just keep doing it. The Crypto 6 case, I thought they had a no-knock warrant. Turns out they didn't.
They just didn't knock. Yeah. And yet that was still, you know, totally accepted by the courts and all that. Didn't matter. The number, if you want to join the show here, 603-283-6160. You can, of course, bring up anything. So here's the actual study by the Cato Institute. And the study itself wasn't about necessarily cameras in homes. That was just one question that they asked. It was about the central bank digital currency idea, the CBDC, which, of course, as we've seen, multiple nation states around the world are implementing CBDCs. Some have actually implemented it, like Nigeria. It's a thing there.
Wasn't it a total failure?
Or no, it's that was still there.
Okay. I might be thinking of a different.
It's a failure in that no one is interested in it. So yeah, the people of Nigeria just don't care, and they're not adopting it voluntarily. So they may end up using some coercion later to force their adoption of
probably
it.
Probably wise in the population's part.
Indeed. So let's just say it's been a bit of a rocky road there in Nigeria for the CBDC. Now, Americans are a little more well-kept, let's say. Mm. They, you know, we're wealthier here in the United States. We're well-fed. You know, there's not rampant poverty here in the United States. At least not yet. Not yet.
You don't watch much news, do you?
No, there's not rampant poverty in the United States.
Well,
I mean, everybody's well-fed here, dude. Look at all the fat people.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
You go to a trailer park, and you're going to find a ton of fat people.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that at least the left wants you to believe that poverty is rampant in the United States.
Oh, sure. I mean, the U.S. definition of poverty, right, where just they just pick an arbitrary number, an income number, and they say anyone that has less than that number is poverty in the United States. Mm. But those people are still making way more money than most of the rest of the world is.
Yeah.
And those people probably have more than one television in their home, more than one smartphone in their family. They probably have an air conditioner and a heater, and they are eating three meals a day. And they're probably eating some number of those meals out at, like, McDonald's, right? So they've got some money. They're just not spending it particularly effectively.
Wisely.
Right?
Yeah. I can just imagine people, you know, paying for, like, their cable bill as opposed to, like, you know, feeding themselves. And then, of course, they're like, well, these people are starving. Well, they're starving because they're paying for their cable and not.
They're still not starving, dude. They'll go to the food bank. They'll get plenty. There's plenty of food. Look at all the fat, poor people in America. I mean, that's a perfect example of how well-fed Americans are. There's a ton of food here, at least for now. Now, maybe things will change, as they did in Venezuela, when hyperinflation hits, where the people in Venezuela were eating three meals a day. And then in recent years, it went down to two meals a day.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And the meals aren't what they used to be. So
all the time you get your paycheck, and this is, I think what people don't understand is, in Venezuela, right, this is a socialist country, by the time you get your paycheck, the money isn't worth anything.
It's not worth as much as it was, that's for sure. So that could happen here. When it will happen here remains to be seen. So for right now, Americans are fat, and they're, you know, they're okay. I mean, they're starting to feel a pinch of inflation that's starting to frustrate people. They're having to make, you know, buying decisions that they haven't made before. Americans are giving up on some of the name brands and going to the store brands, and they're cutting costs and getting smaller quantities of things. So people are adjusting to the inflation that is happening. But, again, we're not skipping meals quite yet.
Not yet.
So according to the Cato survey here on CBDCs, they ask questions about, do you even know what this is, right? Like, who... That's why whenever we use a term, I always spell it out. Central bank digital currency. The average person does not know what these things are, and that's what this survey found.
And even if you spell it out, do people know what the central bank digital currencies are?
No, of course not.
So we have to explain it.
Well, yeah. So a central bank currency is like the dollar or the euro or one of these things that are issued by a central bank. In our case, it's called the Federal Reserve. And the central bank, of course, is the reason why we have inflation, because they print out more money into existence, and or they increment zeros and numbers in a computer system that makes more digital money. And the CBDC is essentially the idea of taking the dollar as we know it and taking it out of the hands of the banks. Now, this is one proposal. How this will end up being implemented remains to be seen, because the banks don't want to lose their control. But it would put it put accounts in the hands for individual accounts in the hands of the Federal Reserve. So like right now, the Federal Reserve deals with big banks. They deal with bankers. They deal with governments. But you don't have an account at the Federal Reserve. This would essentially give you an account with the Federal Reserve through some sort of app on your phone, and give them total control over how you can spend your money.
So are you telling me that instead of having a Visa card, I'd have GovCard?
You probably wouldn't even have a card. I don't know how it would end up being implemented. They would probably want you to have some sort of phone.
But it would be something akin to that, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that gives the government more ability to monitor your transactions instantly rather than having to apply for a warrant or call up the bank and ask them for it. So they would just have that right there at the Federal Reserve. Put restrictions on your ability to have certain transactions.
You drank one too many sodas this month.
Right. Yep. Or if you're on a welfare program, they would restrict where and when or whatever you could spend the welfare money, that kind of thing. So those are some of the things they could do. And, of course, they could cut you off entirely if they wanted to as well. They could freeze your account with one fell swoop. They could empty the account if they wanted to. Total control. So, with that, here is the story from Cato.org. While regularly Americans use digital dollars via credit cards, debit cards, and other digital platforms, those dollars are a liability of a private commercial bank that issued them. CBDC would be a liability of the government central bank or the Federal Reserve, and therefore it would create a direct link between citizens and the government's central bank. Twice as many Americans today oppose the Federal Reserve offering a central bank digital currency as Americans that favor it. So it's 34% of Americans who oppose the CBDC and 16% who favor the CBDC. So we're talking about 50% total having even an opinion about this. 49% of Americans do not have an opinion about the CBDC, and that likely stems from the fact that only 28% of Americans are familiar with CBDCs, which I'm surprised it's even that high.
Yeah.
And 72% are completely unfamiliar with the CBDC. Yeah. 3 out of 10, roughly, of America. Three out of four Americans don't know what a CBDC is. I suspect nearly as many Americans don't even understand that the U.S. dollar doesn't even have any backing on it. You know, the financial intelligence of the average American is very, very low.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. I've actually talked to people who don't understand or cannot comprehend that the dollar, by holding dollars, they lose value every single year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't teach that in school.
Nope. It's not prices going up, really. It's basically money being stolen from you through money printing. Inflation.
That's what inflation is.
It's the government doing that. It's not businesses doing that. The businesses are just reacting to the money printing that the government is doing.
But the government will lie to you and tell you that it's the evil corporate companies seeking profits. That's why, quote, inflation is happening. They'll tell you every lie they can possibly concoct to get you to think inflation is something other than them just printing more money into existence.
Yep. Yeah, and if you it's interesting because they do it through. The inflation is the result of different things that the government does, but one of those examples, besides the money printing, is things like under Trump, they introduced a tariff, and 25% on goods from China. Well, that's about 13% overall at Walmart when you go to buy stuff. It's increased the price by about 13%. So.
Right, and then throw inflation on top of that, you got a real nasty situation.
Yep.
Now, when you break it down demographically, Republicans are more likely to oppose than Democrats. Strong majorities of both Democrats and Republicans are, of course, unfamiliar with CBDCs, but Republicans are slightly more familiar, with 34% of them being aware of them, and Democrats 25%, independents also 25%. But Democrats are almost twice as inclined, 22% of Democrats, to support adopting a CBDC than Republicans at 11%. Interestingly, a majority, that is 53% of Republicans, oppose the CBDC, while most Democrats don't have an opinion, and 22% of them are opposed. Now, I wonder if the Republicans would change their tune if it was a Republican president who was talking about implementing a CBDC.
I'd be surprised if the Republicans – I think what might be holding the Republicans back is they don't quite understand that they can control you more with a central bank digital currency.
Well, they don't want the Democrats to control them more, which is why they're more likely to be against
it. That's true. Right, but that's why when they're in power, they probably would support it.
That's
more,
what I'm saying.
And the Democrats would be more in opposition.
Yeah, I suspect we're going to see a flippening on that if a Republican gets elected. I
suspect you're right.
The president. Let's see. What else do you need to know about this here? Men are apparently more likely than women to support the CBDC, strangely. 22% of men versus 11% of women supporting a CBDC. Why do you think that is? I mean, that's a pretty significant difference.
I mean, women have been, taught to hate technology and hate learning, I think. I think that's kind of been the historic...
But women are on their phones as much as... or at least younger women are on their phones as much as younger men. So.
Yeah, but they're not looking at stocks and bonds. They're, looking at, pictures of... I don't know.
You don't know. You're a gay man.
Yeah, right. What do I know what women are looking at on their phones?
Yeah. I mean, some of them are looking at clothes, and that's certainly true. Apparently, black Americans are more than likely as white Americans, 32% black Americans, 13% of white Americans, to support the CBDC, and are more likely than Hispanic Americans at 20% to support it. Young Americans, here we go, are about 10 times more supportive of a CBDC than seniors. Nearly a third of people under the age of 30, that's 32%, support the CBDC compared to 25% of 30 to 44-year-olds, 8% of 45 to 64-year-olds, and 3% of Americans over 65.
What was the percentage that understood what central bank digital currency was in the first place?
That would be...
Because that number was really low, wasn't it?
Yeah, 28%.
So, people are supporting things they don't even understand what it is that they're supporting.
Well, I think they're talking about the ones that support it. So when they're looking at the numbers of the people who support the CBDC, they're talking about the ones that
only the people
are
who
aware
understand
of it.
It.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think. Although they obviously did make the people in the survey aware of this this issue, and so they started asking them questions about. Like, letting them know what a CBDC could do. The fact that the CBDC could be used to control your purchases. The fact that the CBDC could be used to shut down your ability to make purchases. The things we were just discussing. Mm-hmm. And they started to see that people would be more likely to oppose the CBDC once they learn about the potential. So the survey investigated how Americans navigate potential costs and benefits associated with the United States adopting the CBDC. Overwhelming majorities would oppose the adoption of the CBDC if it meant the government could control what people spend their money on. 74% of Americans said, no, we don't want a CBDC if it can do what you're saying here, and that is restrict what you can
You know what's going to happen is they're going to pass it. And then, of course, it can't be changed.
Right.
So, yeah, you might be objecting to it, but it's too late.
Yeah, they're going
to
shove it down your throat at that point. And not any of these people, you know, I know Ron DeSantis, for instance, out of Florida, has been making a bunch of political hay opposing, quote-unquote, the CBDC. And they passed some bill down in Florida that supposedly, what was the terminology? They didn't make it illegal, but they were acting like that they were somehow damaging, like prohibiting the CBDC, when in reality, according to Aaron Day, who is the Republican candidate out of New Hampshire, the free stater who's running for office, he said the bill actually, all it does is it just simply exempts the CBDC from the Uniform Commercial Code. So therefore, it means that the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code in Florida, doesn't protect people using the CBDC. That's all. It doesn't make it illegal. It doesn't mean that the CBDC is prohibited in the state of Florida. And they couldn't do that under the federal government anyway. They would have to secede from the United States if they want to get out from underneath the CBDC. So it's all politics.
And the politician clearly doesn't want that.
Of course not. He wants to be the president,
right?
Is what that guy wants. So don't believe him for a moment when he acts like he's opposed to the CBDC. It's just political. They're using it as a political football. So they say that 74% of Americans oppose the CBDC if it means government could control what people spend their money on. 68% of Americans oppose the CBDC if the government could monitor their spending. And 68% also oppose the CBDC if it would mean that the government would abolish cash. 65% say the CBDC... that the CBDC could attract cyber attacks, so 65% would oppose it for that reason. 64% would oppose it.
Really?
If the government could charge a tax on those who spend money during recessions. So basically, the more you tell people about the CBDC, the more likely they are to oppose the CBDC. So that's the good news from this particular survey. But of course, as you pointed out, Chris, you know, it doesn't matter sometimes what the people want. Like we saw with the Bearcat here.
People are ignorant.
Here in New Hampshire. Well, even the people weren't ignorant of the Bearcat. They opposed it like 80 to 90%. But the city council went ahead and voted for it. They voted for a tank to have, you know, the police.
It's all too obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. American families are talking about a future of food shortages, banks failing, society breaking down, and what seems like the setup for the apocalypse. But instead of throwing up their hands, folks are leaning into self-reliance, investing in emergency food storage now more than ever. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, has made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on their best-selling 3-month emergency food kit. You get tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200 plus get free shipping on 3-month emergency food kits at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare for what we all know is coming. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Struggling with credit card debt, high interest rates? There is a solution. Credit Guard of America is a nonprofit licensed and bonded company with an A-plus rating with the BBB. Credit Guard has helped people nationwide get out of debt for over 32 years. They will reduce your interest by up to 50%, stop collection calls, and roll everything into one low monthly payment. This is not a loan, and you do need at least $5,000 or more in credit debt to qualify. Call Credit Guard now at 800-208-9833 for a free, no-obligation consultation. That's right, call 800-208-9833 now.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.